A few hours later, Johnny had heard a motor running in the bowl and, edgy, had gone out to check. Angus was running a blade scraper. He was pushing a huge piece of the capital ship through the undercable entrance. It was a piece that had hit the shore. Chief Chongwan was very sharp with him, for it was scraping up the pavement, and Chief Chongwan had no men to repair the scars. Angus said something about wanting to see whether the ultimate bomb were still active.
"Well, don't bring anything back here that touches that area,"
said Johnny, and went back in to answer a radio query. The next morning, Angus had come in to eat a bowl of noodles with him and tell him about it.
"I put that scrap metal way out beyond the cert. I thought it would fall through the gas."
"What gas?"
"Oh, a cert just seems to be gas now. Just a huge cloud of gas. It was blackish for a while, but then it cleared up. You can see it is a cloud of gas, but you can see through it. It's pretty obvious now why the cyclones never used that bomb. As mining people, they needed metal, not gas."
"So what happened to the scrap iron?"
"I thought it would fall through the gas and go on down and hit the surface at Olnup. It didn't. It fell all right, but it just went to the center of the gas cloud, and it's still there. Want to see a picture of it?"
"Just don't fire into that cloud and bring any of that stuff back here on recoil."
I won't,"
promised Angus.
"But what I believe is, once that ultimate bomb converted everything to gas, it went null. It doesn't have anything to work on, and the reaction isn't self-starting again once it's complete. The metal trace says that it's all very low-order gases now. Hydrogen."
"Then the ultimate bomb brings about low-order fission. It stimulates a split of the atoms of heavier metals. I'm no expert, but that's what it seems you're describing."
"Anyway, all I'm trying to tell you is that the mass of the moon didn't change, so far as gravitic influence is concerned. In that coldness, the resulting gas has kind of gone liquid, and the moon is a sort of bubble with a much bigger diameter. I think you could fly through it."
"Great. Don't."
Angus finished up his noodles.
"I just thought you'd like to know that destroying that moon won't upset our coordinate tables. A shift of mass could throw every coordinate out eventually."
"Ah, you do have a point. That was clever of you."
Angus thought so too. But news from other areas was not so encouraging. It was not that anything bad was adding up. It was just the non-existence of news so far as the fate of Chrissy and the people in Scotland was concerned, and the fate of his people in the Russian base. They had found the chief of Clan Fergus outside, very close to death, and after emergency transfusions, had rushed him up to the old underground hospital in Aberdeen. There was not much hope. They had drilled holes through rubble that blocked the tunnels, and they hoped they had gotten air hoses into the shelters. There were rumors they had heard voices, but there had been no mine radios in those shelter areas to begin with, and you couldn't tell much while trying to shout down an air hose, pumps running and all. The city was just towers of smoke, as was Castle Rock. They were having a terrible time trying to open the approach tunnels, working around the clock. The Russian base news was not much better. They had put the surface coal fires out, but the mine was burning underground, and they did not know whether it was reaching the actual levels of the base. The huge doors were so warped they could not be opened even with burning torches, and they were now driving in a brand new entrance to bypass them, adrift through solid rock, working over ground that was still burning under them, down deep. The ventilator shafts were too tortuous and too barred with armor and filter to be of any use. To add to the tension in Kariba, the original small gray man, Dries Glatten, had vanished. The one anti-aircraft gunner on duty said that the man had simply come out about dawn, ordered a new set of signal lights and radio beacon signals near where his ship was parked, and sailed off, wham, into the sky, and they couldn't even track where he had gone to. The lights were out there now, two reds flashing, and the radio beacon was telling all ships to stay clear from a conference area. Lord Voraz, when asked, had shrugged and said it probably came under the heading of prerogatives of a branch manager, and was probably bank business, and he had gone on eating the perpetual bites between meals the cook served him up. He was no help.